One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, YouTube sometimes, or now on band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We know you have a lot of options out there. There's like a million podcasts out there, literally a million podcasts. And the fact that you have chosen to spend your time with us, I'm greatly appreciative. I'll try not to waste your time. We're going to get into some really heavy duty topics today. I mean, we always get into heavy duty topics, right? I'm just trying to make it like as lighthearted as we can, considering the serious nature of the things that we talk about. So I'm excited to do that. But first, look, this show, we do it for free. It goes out to everybody. There's no charge to it. But the only thing I ask is that you consider our sponsors and take a look at the things that they're offering. And if they're a good fit for you, maybe consider purchasing. So My Patriot Supply has been with us from the beginning. They're fantastic. I used to kind of goof on the preppers and, you know, say those preppers, they're waiting for like the apocalypse. Well, I owe the preppers an apology. They were right. I think maybe the real apocalypse, or maybe just the proverbial apocalypse, is around the corner. I don't know, but I'll tell you what, I have come to realize that there's real value in being prepared for everything, like whatever you can be prepared for. And considering we know that there's supply chain issues, we know that these maniacs want to starve us to death and that they're pretty good about going about it, I say it's reasonable for us to be proactive. I think that we should be making moves in advance of their moves. If this is the global chessboard, as the Big New Brzezinski described it, well, then let's make some moves too. And part of those moves would be to get yourself ready. So if you are interested, you can go to the website that they built for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Through there, you can get discounts on a 4-week supply of food. You can get discounts on a 3-month supply of food, but it doesn't stop there. They have everything. They have survival items. They have water filtration systems. They have air purification systems. They have seeds. They have survival coffee, which I thought every coffee was survival coffee. I think most people would agree with me that that's the case. But if you are so inclined, take a look. Just go to the website, see if it's right for you, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. And you listen, this is a situation where you really do want to be, you're better off being 2 or 3 months early than to be a day late on this. We've saw what happened with supply chain breakdowns. You don't want to fight people for hot dogs, vegan hot dogs. You don't want to do it. So just take the additional step of being proactive. That's what I'm saying. And if you don't use our sponsors, you just go to the grocery store, buy extra food, start thinking like a paranoid schizophrenic a little bit, and start stocking up on this stuff. Also, Chemical Free Body has been tremendous for us. Tim James was nice enough to invite me and Sam Tripoli and Pat Miletich on his 100th episode of his podcast. If you are so inclined, I take Chemical Free Body every single day, green 85 drink. It's a scoop of green powder into 12 ounces of water, stir it up, drink it. Looks bad, tastes way better than it looks. It looks like it's going to taste like green slime. It actually tastes pretty good. You'd be surprised. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, and you could take a look at what he put me through the ringer for 90 days, the gut and toxin detox. I lost so much weight, even though I wasn't trying to. I lost so much weight that my pants didn't stay up. I made a video of it. You can see it. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to fake that. It's legit. So if you're interested, chemicalfreebody.com, use the promo code macro on your way out, save yourself some money. All right. Well, now that we got the business out of the way, we can get down to the party. And I don't know that this is necessarily going to be the party that you expected, but it's going to be the party that you need. And I'm so happy to have my friend Dance and Dave on from Surviving the System. You can catch his show on Fringe FM. Hell, you can catch this show on Fringe FM as well. And I've been, and also it goes out as a podcast as well. It's good to see you, Dave. How are you? Nice to see you face to face instead of over, you know, the way we normally do it for your radio show.
We've talked 2 or 3 times, but we've never been on video face to face. It's nice to see you, sir.
It's nice to see you, and I'm glad you have your show, but I'd be lying if I say I wish that you didn't need to do your show, because your show is about breaking out of this, well, it's called Surviving the System. It's a great name for it. We talk about governments and the components of governments. And I think it's fair to classify that as the system.
Yep.
Good parts to it, not many, but some, and bad parts to it, lots of them. And you know, it's all theoretical for someone. Well, it's all theoretical, I guess, for someone like me who hasn't actually been through that dark component of the system. So to me, when I talk about these things, it's like, it's very clinical, and it's me reading or watching videos or, talking to people, but I haven't been there. Yeah. I've had Sean Atwood on. We've talked about that. He did 7 years in federal prison for ecstasy distribution and turned his life around as a result of it. But he got a nice look at the system and how broken it was. And you did too. So give us a bit of insight into your story and how this whole thing came about.
Yeah. So my story is, it came out of nowhere on me. You know, I live a pretty clean life for the most part. Like, I'm not involved in any illegal activities other than this one encounter, which is debatable. But I was on my way to work on a Friday one day, and 7-8 cop cars all pulled me over on the way and arrested me. And that was that. Up until that point, I bought into hook, line, and sinker, the media pushed line that anybody that's in prison or anybody that's been arrested, well, they must have done something wrong. They had to have done something to deserve it. They're bad people. You know, all you see, you hear on the news and you hear on the movies and on TV, anytime that it's anyone related to being arrested, being in jail, being in prison, they are the bad guy. And it's the exact opposite. And it was, I mean, to say that my paradigm was completely blown apart would be putting it lightly. But that began my journey where it quite literally tore me down and rebuilt me back up. So I wound up coming out of this situation better for having going through it. And so now I'm really trying to, I have the show to, number one, to talk about that and just kind of my journey to connect with the other people who might feel like they're alone or that there's no help because they went through the same thing. But also, number two, to point out to just the general population at large that you're being fed a line of bullshit. The people that are inside of these correctional institutions are just normal people that turned right when they should have turned left. And it could just as easily be you as it was me. I just turned left. You turned right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, actually, because I saw a situation with a guy, speaking of, you know, like you're kind of saying the turn right, turn left thing. I saw a situation with a guy who was describing that he made the mistake. He was in a kind of an empty parking lot at night, and a parking lot that had speed bumps. And he made the mistake of just going around the speed bump like you do when there's nobody there and there's no cars and danger. And a cop pulled him over and then started going through his trunk and then started doing all this. And the next thing you know, he's arrested.
Yep.
And he's like, and spent 4 years in prison.
Yep.
For some, you know, some other things. All these things wound up getting tacked on. But he just said, if I hadn't gone around that speed bump, none of this would have happened.
Exactly.
And it, and it can be, it's quite as innocuous as of a little decision. We make 1,000 decisions a day, and it could be, it could come down to just that one, huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is, I met quite a few people that are on the other side of the system, the guards, the staff that run these facilities. And I lost count of the number of times that they would just look at me and go, man, I did so much worse than you guys. I did so much worse than you. I was worse than that guy. I just never got caught. It could easily just be me instead of you.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me how when you're in there, everybody gets it. Even the guards, the warden, everybody that runs the institution, they get that that mask has now been ripped off and that there's no difference between the two of us other than they have the quote unquote authority and we have to now obey whatever they tell us to do. But at the end of the day, just normal people, they're just on the other side of the fence. That's all it is. Wow. So I tried to tell those stories because more often than not, you're not going to hear the story on the news about, like, my friend who was inside for 15 years. It was his fourth time inside, but that was the one that did it. It took him four times. And on this fourth time, he finally said, what am I doing with myself? What am I doing with my life? And he turned himself around and he came out and he got a job and he started his own business and he's married and he's reconciling with all of his family. Like, he's doing everything the right way. It was one of the best things that ever happened to him. But you're not going to hear him on the news. You'll hear about the gang member that was released early on parole and went out and shot somebody. And that's the example that's going to be blasted everywhere to try to put everybody into that same little box and make you think that everybody's a bad person that's been through the system.
Yeah. So it is possible to be rehabbed coming out of that, but it's by your own doing, right? You have to be sort of responsible for your own program.
It is 100% your own doing.
Yeah.
And you've got to take that initiative. Now, there are people that will help. There are good people that work inside of the system. My experience is they're few and far between. You know, if you take your 10-80-10 rule, you've got the 10% of the people that are just there because they love the power. They love to lord it over you. 80% of the people, they're just there to do their job. You know, you don't bother them. Don't give them a reason to come after you. They're going to be fine. They leave you alone. They're all right. And then you've got the 10% that are really in there trying to help and try to make a difference and try to help to turn those people around when they're ready. And there's different programs that are offered. And it's interesting because the voluntary style programs that you're going to find are things like Seven Habits on the Inside, based on the seven habits of highly effective people. You can take that whole class, but it's designed specifically for people inside of a correctional institution. There is all kinds of MRT, moral recognition therapy. There's lots of different courses that you can voluntarily take. And those don't matter to the system. It's nice that you took those. It might look good to parole. That's great. But they're going to recommend that you go see this state-sanctioned psychologist or this state-sanctioned psychiatrist. And you need to be at these meetings at such and such time every week. And they are the most pointless and useless meetings you could ever possibly imagine. Mm. It's just the exact opposite of what you would expect someone to be trying to tell you. Hey, how do I get out of this? They don't know. They have no idea. You know, we had some of the people that were running the programs there were interns. They didn't know. They had no idea what they were doing. So it was up to us. It was up to the individual to say, you know what? I'll just do it myself. I've got this. That's all right. You can just go ahead and stay over there. I'll take care of myself.
Well, you mentioned that it might look good for the parole board.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to know your thoughts on parole, because this seems like, on the surface, for people that don't know much about it, it sounds like a good way to get yourself out of prison earlier. However, I know a lot of people, I don't know them personally, but I know a lot of people's stories that have been on the inside for a while, and they don't like the idea of parole because it then attaches additional restrictions to them once they get out that almost guarantees that they're headed right back, because in order to fully comply with parole, it's almost impossible, and some might say designed to be so. So what are your thoughts on the parole system?
Yeah, it is my personal opinion. It's 100% designed to be so. Mm. And I've been talking about this a little bit lately on my show, where I've really gone into specifics on why I think that, kind of equating my personal experience and then all of the experience and stories and listening to everybody that I know that went through it. And so I'm here in Nebraska. And while I can only speak for what happens in Nebraska, I've found that it's pretty similar no matter where you go. But Nebraska has a specific set of laws that are designed to guide the legal system on who gets parole, when they get parole, what are some reasons you can deny them parole, things like that. And one of the things that's used is what's called LB 191. It's the good time law is what it's referred to here in Nebraska. And what it specifically states is for each day that you serve, you get a day off of your sentence. So if you have a 5-year sentence and you make it all the way through, that 5 years is actually 2.5 years because you get a day off for each one. Mm-hmm. And then they use that to lord over you. So if you do something wrong, or if you get in trouble, or if you break a law, some kind of infraction, they take that time away from you. And they say, hey, we're going to take 14 days away. So you wind up staying in 14 days longer. So the funny thing about the law, though, is that it addresses the two parties. So you've got the one party being the institutionalized individual, the person inside of the prison. And here's all the things that you need to abide by. And here's how your sentence is going to be structured. And then you've got the other part that talks about how the system is going to handle that, wherein it has to provide certain programming to you within a certain date. It can't deny parole to you based on whether or not you've had this programming at certain times. It has to provide you the opportunity to do these things while you're out on parole. And they do the exact opposite of all of that. So,
of course,
we on the one end are being held to literally the letter of the law. You know, we're already inside. We're already at the mercy of the system as it is anyway. And then you turn around and you look at them and you're going, well, now, hold on a second. The parole board just said that they were going to deny me parole because I'm not finished with this state recommended voluntary programming that you said I don't have to take, but now they're saying that I don't get parole because I didn't take it, but you said I don't have to take it. And they just go, shut up and go back to your room. Like, there's no rationale to it. You try to use logic and reason and they just hit you harder on the head with the baton.
This is like the DMV times a million.
Oh, you can't even imagine.
Plus batons.
Makes your head spin. It'll make your head absolutely spin. You know, so But when you, from just a humanitarian concept, first of all, prison is inhumane, absolutely inhumane. The more that I've researched now, I firmly believe in the abolition of prison. We need to completely tear down what we have and rebuild it. There are studies all over the place from countries over in Europe, like Sweden and the Netherlands, and the rehabilitation programs and how much better those are. There's countries in the Middle East, and you know, we've been programmed here to think that they're so backwards, but they go through so many steps to try to offer second chances and work with someone. And hey, you broke this law. What happened? What's going on in your life? How can we help you?
Right.
And the community really comes around them. We're the exact opposite here. So we have this whole ass backwards type image. But just from a numbers perspective, as a taxpayer in the state of Nebraska, to house an individual in the Nebraska Department of Corrections for a 1 year period of time is about $40,000.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Yeah, it's a lot of money when you consider that the latest statistics say there's going to be around 7,000 in the next couple of years here. So 40,000 times 7,000 of those, it's a big number. You know, we're talking huge taxpayer money, but that same individual 12 months outside on parole is $20,000 to the taxpayer. So why is the legislature and why are these governors and why are all of these politicians pushing so hard to get rid of parole? Why do they want everybody inside so much? Why are they telling you that parole is such a bad idea? They make more money when you're inside. That's the bottom line. They get more money from the taxpayers when you are inside of that correctional institution. Wow. That's all it is.
Damn. So, and that takes us to sort of the new topic du jour, especially for the left, and that's bail reform.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a bit conflicted on the bail reform component of this because I can see both sides. You don't want to have the revolving door of what Chesa Boudin does in the DA of San Francisco, where you're literally arrested, booked, and let out, and not even charged with anything, on a, you know, and you just go out and commit more and more crimes. There's a problem there. Bail, you know, bail disproportionately affecting poor people more so than rich people, 100% a real thing. Where's the middle ground here between being sort of, you know, preventing a person from just committing blatant crimes and being out, let out hours later, and being fair and reasonable to get somebody into this, in, processed, and out if it's not a serious offense, out on a bail? Like, if you were to remake the bail system, where would you start? And what would sort of the things that you would do to make this a little bit more humane and make it actually work like it's supposed to work?
Yeah, that is the challenging part, because the other part to my show, other than just kind of discussing these topics and bringing these situations to light, is I'm incorporating in the life altering realizations that I had through all of this situation. I came out and I started working with, I don't know if you know who James Arthur Ray is. He was in The Secret.
Got it. I do know who James Arthur Ray is from The Secret. I also know that he had some situation with
the Sedona incident.
The Sedona. Yes. Yeah. The Sedona camps.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So while I was inside, I found his book, Harmonic Wealth, and wound up reading that. And it was the perfect book at the perfect time. I loved it. I still have a copy of it. I still read it to this day. It answered so many questions that I had about life and the universe and how things work. So when I got out, I had no clue about his past. So I just got on the internet and started looking him up and finding some of his YouTube videos. And then I came across the sentencing for the Sedona incident and found out that he had done 2 years in Arizona prison.
Yeah. And for those that don't know, it was a sweat lodge where things got taken too far and people wound up dying. He was saying, no, you've got to stay in there and purify yourself. And they're like, I don't think I'm feeling good. And they had got heat stroke and were taken to the hospital. And a couple of people actually wound up dying.
Exactly.
And it was there was a conversation there. Did he push things too far? Obviously he wasn't trying to kill people, but people died. And so, and I knew who he was from The Secret. The Secret was, well, I had the video, I had the CDs of it. You know, I mean, I remember his voice, you know, I know who he was. And when I saw him go through that, I thought, oh man, this is horrible. It's horrible all around. So you did you connect with him afterwards?
Not only did I connect with him, but I spent the next 3.5 years after that working one-on-one with him to learn how to be a coach, a life coach. Mm-hmm. Because my thinking was, well, I'll tell you what, if there's anybody that knows how to come through this and come out better for it on the other end, because he was still doing his speaking engagements and holding his classes and doing his teaching. And I said, this has got to be the guy to show me how to do it. And so I started working with him to really start to delve into, I guess, just the deeper mysteries of the universe. You can call it whatever you would like. I had just hit that tip of the iceberg while I was inside and realized how much more to life there was. And now I needed somebody to kind of help guide me through it. And so what I've come to understand through learning over the last few years is that we can't fix the system that we have. We can't fix it. There's no way. You know, take for example, I know a lot was said about Donald Trump, good or bad, whatever you want to call it, but man, he nailed it. It's a swamp.
Yeah.
And if you use that same analogy of the swamp in politics, period, not just in DC, but anything in politics, all the way from your local council to the governor, to the White House, whatever it might be. If you look at it as a swamp, I don't care how good of a person you are or how pristine your clothes are. When you go in there, you're going to get shit all over you.
Yep.
There's just no way around it. It's going to happen. And that equates to the fact that all of these people, they may go in with the best of intentions, but it corrupts them. Yeah. Every last one of them. My personal opinion.
I think you're right.
Yeah. If there's a good one out
denying
there,
that.
I've never met him. Politicians just say whatever they're going to say to get you to vote for them. So we have to completely tear down what we've got. And we need to look to some of these other countries that have rebuilt their rehabilitation style systems.
Yeah. 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 You mentioned Northern Europe, you mentioned Norway and some of these countries have really just taken a fresh approach to it, and to the point where, like, I've watched every MSNBC lockup show that's out there. I've watched Hard Time, you know, National Geographic. I've watched them all multiple times. You know, I know that I don't want to go out on the yard in Pelican Bay. Let's just put it that way. Sure. It was fascinating to see this different approach by the countries that said, well, let's reimagine the prison system. Because look, in America, clearly it's not working. As the statistics show that we have 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prison population, something isn't working right. And like you said, you know, this swamp, this system is, you know, there's a swamp there. You can't fix the system. You have to build a parallel system that is more appealing, that works better, that functions in a humane way, and has real
system obsolete,
real results. And then you build that up next to it, and then you just let the better idea win, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, absolutely. And that's where we're at. Now, one point that I will say, kind of going back to what you were just talking about there with, you know, the system not working.
Actually, it does work fine.
I was going to say, boy, it depends on what side of that coin you're on, because they just keep making more and more laws and building more and more prisons and putting more and more people inside. And you got to ask yourself why. It's working great for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to amend my statement. The system is working exactly the way it was designed to work. And exactly. That is, and therein lies the problem. It doesn't work for us. The system, so when we look at it, we go, the system's broken. The people that design the system say, it's working just fine for us. In fact,
right.
you're in some sort of delusion where you think that we're trying to help the people that have been put into these prisons. That is not what we're doing. We're warehousing human beings.
Yeah.
We're creating gladiator schools. And then we're sending them out into the public far more fucked up than they were to begin with. And then going, I can't believe things went wrong. Yeah, of course they went wrong. What do you think was going to happen?
You know, in the state of Nebraska, we're considered flyover country. So a lot of people don't know the statistics of where we're at. But we are the second most overcrowded prison population in the nation.
Really? I didn't
right
know
behind,
that.
Yeah, right behind Alabama. It's been at emergency levels for decades. And the governor is just, the ACLU has been screaming from the rooftops and trying to make some change. For better or worse, they've got their own agenda. But the fact of the matter is, it's been very well known. And to combat that, well, let's build another prison. That's the answer that we're at right now.
That's the mentality.
It's like, oh my God, it makes no sense. But it does to them. And you know, all of this goes back to this is the opening to my show. And this is what I've based everything around, the topics of my show, where I'm going with it, where I'm coming from, the 13th Amendment. You know, everybody, if you go to any elementary school, middle school, high school, whatever it might be, and you ask them, what did the 13th Amendment do? And they're all going to tell you, well, it abolished slavery. Lincoln freed the slaves. Okay. What does the rest of it say, though? Because it didn't abolish slavery. Read the words. It got rid of slavery, except when used as punishment for a crime. Mm-hmm. So all that it did was the system. If you think about it and look at it retroactively now in hindsight, it was a brilliant move by them.
Yeah.
Evil genius.
Yeah, of course.
They just transferred the whole slave ownership from individuals on plantations to the government.
To the state. Yeah. It's really devious. And we see, you know, like Angola in Alabama, you see they're still out there working the farms, you know, guys on horse, like cops on horseback, guards, you know.
Yeah.
Cracking the whip, maybe even literally cracking the whip. These guys working. That's a plantation. Of course, you know,
totally.
It's the poor among the society that's out there working, guys that have been there for a long, long time. They don't, you know, they're never getting out of there. Now we have the more, and that's of course a somewhat isolated case in the sense of the overt farm working, which is just, it just says slavery all over it. When you see a bunch of black guys shackled working on a farm, you just go slavery. But but there's a more devious component to it that is less viewed as slavery. And that is the corporations that are hiring prison labor to work. Microsoft, Starbucks, McDonald's, they all do it. You know, you're getting your uniform from McDonald's. It's made in prisons. You're getting the pack, you know, customer service help for Microsoft. Some of it's done through prisons, packaging. Some of it's done. There's a lot of things that go on where corporate America has found a way to monetize this labor force. And that is, of course, the new version of slavery. So it's funny that, I mean, it's interesting because, like you said, the 13th Amendment, it just reclassified what slavery really is and who's in charge of it. And now the state's in charge of it. So they put you in a prison, and that is a form of slavery. Now, I think an argument could be made that people would say, well, the slaves didn't do anything wrong except for being black, and they were captured, and maybe the people that have committed crimes. Okay, I get that. If the people committed the crimes.
Yep.
And let's talk about whether or not the crimes and air quotes are even just, you know, what's the driving with a busted taillight and telling the cop to go fuck himself? I mean, that'll get you put in jail for a while.
Totally.
And is it really like the biggest crime in the world? Probably not. But this mentality, like we started off with, this mentality in America, especially, they must have done something wrong to be inside, you know. They must have. I mean, they don't just arrest people for no reason.
They do.
They do that all the time, every day, every week. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about the slavery inside of prisons, right? So there's a private, there's private prisons, and inside that there's a private workforce of indentured servants that are making, they're technically not slaves because they're paying them what, 17 cents an hour or something like that, I guess.
Yep.
But did you, what's your experience with the private or with the prison workforce?
Yeah. Yeah. So in the Nebraska Department of Corrections, it's primarily through the government. Like there's a couple of outside organizations that come in and you'll get paid. It's a little more than 17 cents an hour. I don't remember how much it was, but I mean, we're not talking anywhere close to minimum wage. If you don't have any kind of those jobs in the Department of Corrections, you have to have a job. And everybody gets assigned a job. So you could be in charge of mopping that corner of the floor at 7 p.m. every night. I could be in charge of wiping down this table at 6 o'clock in the morning every day. So everybody's got a job. And they're paid anywhere from like $1.21 a day up to $3.75.
Okay.
Those
a day 375 or an hour?
Yeah, a day.
A day.
Per day. Okay. Yep. Per day. Okay. 5 day work week. You know, if you work 7 days, it doesn't matter. You're getting five of those days because that's what legally is the work week. So if you total all of that up, you know, you're really only making on the low end, you're what, but 25, 30 bucks a month.
Right.
And then on that high end, it's closer to about 90 to 100. So those are the more coveted jobs. But those are the things like a specialized skill, like the paralegals that work in the law library to assist people with whatever the legal matters might be.
Right.
I was right in the middle. I was at like 225. I was able to work in the library. I was so glad I got that instead of having to mop the floors. I just got lucky because two of my cellies worked in the library and I was like, I love books. Do you guys have an opening? Because I'll go work there. And they got me in the next day.
Perfect.
So I was pretty fortunate. But even with that, what you got to understand is not only are there for-profit organizations utilizing the slave labor to profit, then you've got the outside companies that are selling to these prisoners inside and profiting off of it. So you have to buy all of your hygiene products. You've got to buy your deodorant and your shampoo. And if you want a nice pair of shoes, you've got to buy your shoes. If you want a TV, you've got to buy your TV. And if you want to eat something other than the, I don't even know how to describe it. It's not food that they serve to you in these cafeterias.
Soylent Green.
Yeah. Pretty much. You know, and it's funny too, in the state of Nebraska here, I know it's similar in other states, but here, when I was down in OCC, Omaha Correctional Center, in the kitchen, the boxes of food that came on the box said not fit for human consumption.
Oh my God.
And that was what they were served. So if I wanted to eat something that wasn't crap, I had to pay more for it on the commissary, things like ramens or packs of fish or some peanut butter. And those prices go through the roof. So
what's a pack of ramen cost?
You know, with a pack of ramen, really, that wasn't too bad. It was okay. Still about that 25 cents.
That's good. I'd be swollen up with sodium, but I'd just be eating ramen all day long.
Yeah. And we did too. One of the like funny side note, but you learn to get creative with your cooking when you're inside.
I've watched enough documentaries to see like the prison nachos and the pruno and all kinds of crazy shit like that.
So
they need a prison cooking show.
Oh man, it would go over. It would go over too. My favorite was the burritos. First time I ever had one. It's just ramen mixed with refried rice and beans. And this particular, you can only find this particular rice and beans in commissaries and prisons. It's only, you cannot find it anywhere in the general population. And then you chop up some summer sausage and some cheddar cheese and some pickles, and you wrap it up in your tortilla and maybe put some Cheetos on top of it. Gourmet meal.
I thought I saw that on the menu over at, Tony Roma's Steakhouse. Yeah.
I got home and within like a couple of weeks, I turned to my wife and I was like, I really want a burrito. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I need to make a burrito. I got, and I've got all these options now. You know, the first, I went to Olive Garden when we got out as my first meal, and now I'm back to Taco Bell and McDonald's, whatever I want to eat. And I'm like, yeah, oh my God, I really want a burrito. And then not too long after that, one of my friends that was inside calls me up. It's like, hey, I'm at the store. What did we use to make those burritos again?
That's so funny.
You get really creative at learning how to cook, but that's the better food. That's the point.
Yeah.
Like the food that they're serving you is crap. So if you actually want some kind of sustenance, you have to pay for it out of your own pocket.
Is it possible to do that with the low amount of money that you're making, or do you have to have some sort of side hustle in there?
You've got to have side hustle, or you've got to have help from the outside.
Okay.
You know, especially on that low end, the majority of the jobs are on the lower end, that $1.21 a day. Mm-hmm. That's only $25 a month. Out of that comes your basic hygiene products. If you want to communicate with the outside world, you've got to pay for your stamps and envelopes. You've got to pay for your email communications. You've got to pay for anything and everything you can possibly imagine. So then you're left with maybe a couple of bucks left over, and maybe you'll use that to get a few ramen and treat yourself every Saturday night.
Right.
So all of these other companies are inside of, they're profiting off of the individuals that are incarcerated. So, but then on top of that, state of Nebraska is a little different because it's a state run institution. We do the license plates.
Oh, and yes. This is NSP. This has been the we've heard about this since I was a kid.
Yep. But
you
it's true.
To prison, you're going to wind up making license plates.
100% true. 100% true. Nebraska State Penitentiary down in Lincoln, you can get a job making the license plates for the state of Nebraska. But again, if you think about this and take all of the emotion out of it and take all of the pre-programmed bullshit that you've been fed from the media, take all of that out of it. Let's just look at what's going on with your taxpayer money now. So you're paying $40,000 a year to house this individual in the Department of Corrections and have him then make these license plates that you then have to pay for through your taxes to the DMV when you go in to license or renew whatever your vehicle might be. They've got you coming and going.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the greatest racket of all time. The only reason that we don't know it is because it's called government. It's called taxes. It's not called profit. You don't see it on a profit and loss sheet or traded on the S&P. It's your government. And they've sold it to you that this is for your own betterment. This is for the better good. This is for the protection of society.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, some people are vicious maniacs that deserve to be locked up. I don't think we're talking about that.
Nope.
When I was a kid, I had two guys try to carjack me and my mom in broad daylight, put a gun to my mom's head. I watched that. I had to go pick the guys out of the, that police lineup where they bring all the guys in and you're standing behind two-way glass. I had to do that when I was on my eighth birthday.
Yeah.
And say that was the guy that put the gun to my mom's head and said he was going to kill her.
Yep.
So that guy, fuck that guy. And that guy only did 5 years. You know, they'd been committing armed robberies and they were Marines.
Yep.
And they stole the guns from the Marine Armory, which is a bad idea. But 5 years for that, I watched that. I got my first taste of like the world.
Yeah.
You know, what can happen at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon in the parking lot of a mall. You know,
oh, sure.
Two guys walk up, guns, boom, sure. Move over, you're dead. And you see that and you go, oh, so I don't have a problem those guys going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
But where I do have the problem is that we have like hundreds of thousands of laws. So many laws that we're all breaking them on a daily basis by, you know, wearing shorts on a Thursday in some city. And they're like, oh, we have an ordinance against that. So there's some rule that we're breaking. We need to reimagine this entire system. If you are in charge, if they put you in charge of the prison of build, not fixing this system, this system's totally fucked, but. We're going to start small. We're going to do a pilot program. We're going to test this out. We want Dance and Dave to be in charge of it.
Mm.
Where do you put the money? Do you put the money towards I mean, does rehab really work? Is this a drug and alcohol sort of situation where we got to get these people off drugs and alcohol first? Is it an education system? Is it that they were never shown love? Is it just bullshit?
Yeah.
Asshole cop screwing this whole thing up. Like, how would you go about, like, where would you even start? How would you prioritize fixing this system? Because it's clear it's broken, and we can build something different and something better. But I frankly don't even know if I would know where to start.
Yep. And I wouldn't either. So what I would do is, smarter men than me have already done that work.
Okay.
I would turn to them, and I have. One of the first guests that I had on in my first year of being on the podcast is, his name is James, and he runs the Community Justice Center based out of Lincoln here in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And he has garnered national attention. Ivy League universities are coming to study him to figure out what he is doing, because his statistics are better than not just the state of Nebraska, but national averages. And what he's focusing on is community-based restorative justice. And if you don't know what restorative justice is basically the opposite of what we have. We have punishment, punitive justice.
Right.
So restorative justice is where you take that individual and they have to face what they've done. So, like, when I say that, take, for example, when I'm going to use that same example that you just talked about, when your mom was carjacked. Mm-hmm. So your mom was carjacked, and then the state stepped in and they arrested those individuals and prosecuted them. But they step in and you are now out of the picture. Your mom had no control over what happened at that point, because it now becomes the state of fill in the blank versus these two individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So if your mom, for some reason, came back and just had a huge heart, call it naive, call it loving, whatever you want to call it. And she said, look, I don't want them to be prosecuted. I don't want them to do time. That's the wrong answer. The state would say, well, I don't care what you say, because this is what the law says. And I have to follow the law and I'm the prosecutor, blah, 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 blah. So we've completely disconnected the community from these crimes. And in order to heal, I mean, this goes all the way back to, you know, Carl Jung talking about the shadow work. We can't just pretend like these demons aren't there. We have to face them and we have to conquer them. And so, have you ever seen Van Jones's show on restorative justice on CNN?
No.
Okay. I highly recommend it. It's examples of reformative justice, restorative justice, mm-hmm. where you'll have an individual who's in prison for life for having murdered the daughter of an individual. And that individual gets to come into the prison and meet with this person.
Yeah.
And tell them, this is how you affected me. This is what it did to me. And this is what it did to my life. Now, I don't care how hard you are. I don't care what kind of an environment you grew up in. When it's just you and the person that you've harmed, it gets to you at some point. So you watch these men, hardened criminals, you would call them, just break down and apologize. I'm so sorry. I had no idea what I was doing. There's always reasons for it. It could have been because they had the wrong upbringing. Maybe they were on drugs, whatever it is. Those aren't excuses, but you're not going to cure the problem by locking them up and throwing away the key, never letting them face the facts of what they've done, never letting that individual over there who was harmed have any kind of closure, because they have no contact with that person. Now they're having to subsidize that person at $40,000 a year for the next however many years. You know, it's just so ass backwards. But allowing the community to step up and say, this is how we're going to deal with this individual. Here's what we're going to do. Yeah. And you take it back to a community level. Like, we have taken all of it out of our hands. And we've just said, here, you do this for me. I don't know what to do with this. You just go ahead and do it. And we've let them run amok with that power.
We really have. And it's a great idea to I've seen some of those programs where they bring in the victims' families and the relatives, and they have this sit down, and it's tough, and it's sort of mediated by like psychologists and people like that that are trying to bridge this. And sometimes it goes well, and sometimes the victim's family get something good out of it. They get some closure, or they at least get an understanding of why this happened, because it's all very, you know, if it's a random crime or it's some violent thing that just sort of, you know, you didn't even know you didn't even know these people and you did this horrible thing. It's like, why? And so to have some sort of answers, even if they aren't there's no answer that's going to make everyone go, oh yeah, okay, now I understand. Now I feel fine. Now it's cool. It's totally fine that you shot my husband or whatever. They're never going to feel that, but at least having some backstory to who this person is and why this person did what they did. And was this really random? Was there more to it? I know that some people will say, well, I don't really even care. They did what they did and they should be punished for it. Okay. Yeah,
sure.
But not every victim's family feels that way. Some victims' families have to understand it however they can. And so that's a really interesting way of looking at it. So what is this guy, what does he do? He works inside a prison with groups, or does he have his own rehabilitation facility, or how does this work?
Yeah. So he's expanded quite a bit, but basically what they do is they go in and teach workshops inside of the correctional institutions. And in his story, funny enough, similar to mine, like that's why I had him on. He's the stories you don't hear about on the nightly news. He went on a robbery spree. He was high on coke and went on a robbery spree in Lincoln and wound up getting arrested. And he did a pretty good chunk of time. But that was what he needed to turn himself around. And so when he came out, he took all of this bullshit that he saw and said, there's got to be a better way to do this. And that was when he started just with that community focus. And the local board heard of what he was doing and gave him a little bit of support. And then he went to the police and he said, hey, I'm trying to do this. And they said, that's a great idea. They gave him a little bit of support. He just very, very slowly, grassroots effort, got all of the support from the community. So now, as a convicted felon, he's going inside of all these correctional institutions in the state of Nebraska, talking to people about how to do it better, how to be better. If you want to clean yourself up, you can. And so he holds his workshops on how to do that. And then when they get out, there's resources all over the place to support those people. So you've got the Community Justice Center. You've got organizations like RISE here in Omaha, used to be called Defy Ventures, who's a national organization all over. They teach individuals with a record inside and outside of correctional institutions. They teach them entrepreneurial skills and job readiness skills with the ultimate goal of helping them to start their own business. So
anywhere, right? They've got a convicted felon.
If nobody's going to hire you, just do it yourself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that I think is something that is a good way to look at this, because doing time is only part of it. It's getting out of prison, and then you're doing a different sort of time.
The time doesn't end.
With something, a radioactive component on your resume.
Yep.
You can't lie about. You can't lie and say it's not there, or you'll go back in.
Yep.
And you can't really explain it away necessarily. And you certainly don't want to do that in the first job interview, because it'll be the last one. So we're putting guys that come out in an impossible situation where they're unemployable.
Yep.
And then what do you think they're gonna do? They're gonna turn to crime because they have no other options. So, is part of the answer to this destigmatizing the notion of somebody that's come out of that has a conviction on their record as you know, destigmatizing the fact that not all these people necessarily are the Night Stalker?
Yeah, and there's not really one particular silver bullet that's going to work to do all of this. Like, there's so. you talk about it in your box, the book, the Octopus of Global Control. There's so many tentacles that go into so many parts of this. It's like an onion. You peel one layer off and there's still more behind it.
Right.
So, yes, there absolutely is a stigma. And it's not like that in other countries. You know, my financial advisor and a good friend of mine, she was a coach that I met through James Arthur Ray. She still works with me on a regular basis. She's from Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And she tells me all the time about what would happen with individuals in their community when they would get outside of prison, of being punished. She said the community would welcome them with open arms. Mm. They would make sure that they knew that they were still loved, that they were supported, that they were there to help them, so that they didn't just automatically be like, well, fuck this. I may as well just go back to doing what I was doing.
Right.
You know, but the trick here is, and I know you're with me on this one, we're not going to overcome that with the media and Hollywood and politicians constantly shoving it down your throat of how horrible these people are, because they're taking 1% of that entire prison population and using it to represent the other 99.
Yeah. In 2017, a story was written, I think it was by the New York Times, I might be wrong, about a district attorney or a prosecutor who was working overworked, and I don't know if they said underpaid, but definitely underpaid for what he was doing. Talked about how how many cases he currently had that he was working on. It was 173, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And he said that the amount of time he had to prepare for a case was the amount of time it takes to listen to the Don McLean song American Pie, which is about a little over 7 minutes or 7 to 8 minutes. And they started calling it the American Pie defense. Now, knowing that and understanding how insane that is, how can we not be surprised that we have like a 90 something percent plea bargain rate?
Yep.
This is a recipe for disaster, but the plea bargaining component to this, where they stack charges, you're looking at 80 years, man, and you're like, holy shit. Or let's make it realistic. You're looking at 10 years, which is enough to terrify anybody.
Yep.
But it's stacked charges. It's a bunch of horseshit. But you don't know that these charges can go away. As far as you know, they are rock solid.
Yep.
You've got a defender, a public defender, because you have no money, because you're stealing stuff, because you don't have money. And you've got a public defender who has 172 other cases to work on. He has 7 minutes to work on your case.
Yep.
Where is the incentive for this guy to put up a vigorous defense for you when he can plea you out and say, I'll get you 2?
Yeah.
And you go, it's better. And he says, it's better than 10.
Totally.
And you go, yeah, it is better than 10. But yep. I didn't do it. Here's the problem. I'm fucking innocent.
And exactly.
So 2 might as well be 200 when you're innocent. So how do we break out of that?
You know, and it's not even when you're innocent. It's they distort the truth so much. So you may have that stack of charges and they're like, okay, well, if you plea, we'll waive these ones, but we're still going to charge you with this one. And you're like, yeah, but like, that's not the whole story. If that even makes any sense, like they might hit you with some kind of a drug charge, but there's so many extenuating factors that go into it that if somebody would just sit down and listen to the explanation, they go, well, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Why are they charging me with that? I don't understand that either, but they do it anyway. So even the people that did something are getting much harsher punishments than they normally would have in just a normal, rational one-on-one conversation where somebody would go, oh, yeah, wow, I didn't know that about you. Oh, okay. But you get it in front of a prosecutor and a judge who are up for re-election and they've got to look like they're tough on crime. And so they're going to drop the book on you. And here's another thing, too, that didn't even get accounted for in your example. I lost count of the number of guys that I met that took that plea bargain and went before the judge, and the judge just said, nah, I don't want to take that plea bargain. You're going to prison for 10 years anyway.
Really?
Oh,
shit.
All over. They use it to get you because. So let's take a step back. Using those statistics that you just covered, which are correct, 90% of these cases end in a plea bargain. If all of those cases went to court, the system would collapse because there's no way you would be waiting, go to trial for 10 years before you ever had anything happen. Like, just look at Texas right now. Texas is about 2 years from the time that you're arrested till the time that you go to a judge for your final day in court, 2 year time. And that time in court, like, you can change a lot in that 2 year period of time. You could completely reform yourself. So 2 years down the road, you're being punished for something that happened 2 years prior. What's the point? But then you take all of these people who do take that plea bargain because the system is incentivized to get you to plea so that they don't collapse upon themselves and so that they can have a much more impressive conviction rate, because look how many people I've convicted when they're running for their next reelection.
Yep.
And then you get to the judge and the judge just goes, nah, no, I'm not. No, you're going to prison anyway. Fuck this plea bargain. Get out of here. And it's completely legal. There's nothing you can do about it. There is no recourse. There's no appeal. That judge has 100% autonomy in that courtroom.
Oh, my God. Like, that's a trap.
Yeah.
And you go in and, you know, look, I'm fairly educated, but I'm not educated on the law. Not on the nuance of the law. Take someone that isn't educated on anything and expect them to understand the law and know how that works or what. No, you can't do that. Or we have to petition for this, or we have to file this. I mean, why, you know, all these things that you can do, nobody tells you about it. So you're defenseless in there. And your only advocate is somebody who's overworked and doesn't really care about you anyway, probably is fried from the job itself. So
absolutely.
Did you guys, I mean, this, the, you know, what really makes me insane is that there's so much white collar crime happening like on daily basis. And it seems to go unpunished.
Yep.
But then there's the, you know, poor crime, you know, crimes committed in the inner cities or deemed to be poor, you know, poor communities and things like that.
Yep.
They don't have a problem going and finding all those people, but God forbid you commit a crime while working at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
You'll never see the inside of a courtroom, right? Did the people talk about that at the end, how unfair that was on the inside, that you never saw some lawyer in the cell next to you? It was always some guy that worked at a tire shop that got busted for swiping $50 out of the register.
Oh yeah, absolutely. What was even more talked about, and here is, This blew my mind when I started to dig into it and listen to the stories and kind of look at the statistics. If you go back to the book 1984 by George Orwell, and he talks about thought crimes, where you can basically be convicted for just thinking about doing something. We're there right now, but you don't know it until you're standing in front of that judge. So I'll use two examples. There was an example of a gentleman who had some mental issues. He was in the car with his fiance, and they were struggling. And he just said, you know what? It's better if just neither of us are here. Let's go. And drove the car off the road. Killed her. He survived. So he was brought up on charges of attempted murder. Well, murder. And got 5 years of probation. He did it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely did it. Now, his mind state, we can take that all into consideration. Absolutely. But just look at the fact that he did do it, undisputed. Mm-hmm. He got 5 years probation. Another gentleman who his sister was attacked by her ex-boyfriend, assaulted, and she fought him off, so it wasn't anything more than a little bit of fisticuffs. Nothing more happened than that. Her brother found out, went to this dude's apartment. He said, if I ever catch you near my sister again, I will fucking kill you. That is what's now called felony terroristic threats. And he was convicted for multiple years in prison. He didn't do it. He said he would do it at some future point if this ever happened. The dude that did do something is out in the community on probation. But the guy that didn't do anything is back inside the prison.
Oh my God. That has got to make people insane.
And like, nobody outside will listen to you because they've been so brainwashed by Law and Order and all of these different shows and the nightly news and all of the movies. You try to tell the general population this and they're like, no, he had to have done something else. No, he didn't. This is how it is.
This is a broken down system. Your show is so instrumental for people that want to have an idea about this. They need to go check out your show. What's the best way for people to connect with you to start to listen to your shows and get on board with what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the best way, if you want to interact live on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time, I'm on fringe.fm and it airs live every Thursday night I go out. You know, you can call in, ask questions, tell me stories, whatever it might be. Outside of that, I'm available on anywhere you can find platforms. So once the show is done, we record it, producer edits it, puts it up to the podcast feeds, and then you can get it typically just a few days after that. Outside of that, you know, I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I don't utilize them too much just because I'm kind of in that point where I'm like, I know I'm going to get banned when I start talking about some of this.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really like social media anyway. Like, I know all of the detriments to it, but I keep it there because it's an easy way for people to get a hold of me when they want to. So I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/survivingthesystem and on Twitter at STS the podcast. I keep those up primarily just for the messaging communication. But I also have a website, survivingthesystem.org. It's got an archive of all the shows. If you're someone that prefers to listen to shows on a desktop or a laptop computer as opposed to an app on a phone, everything is there. And there's a contact me page down there in the bottom so you can put your information in. And I'm almost always reachable. My day job requires me to be within arm's reach of my phone pretty much at all times. Right. So I'm usually able to get back to anybody that gets a hold of me within 24 hours.
Well, I wish we didn't have to talk about this stuff. I wish we were talking about unicorns and rainbows and baseball and all that stuff. And
yeah,
but instead we have to, because this is a tremendously important concept for people to understand, that the prison system, it's not just broken, it's broken by design, that the people that are participants in it, there's more to their story than meets the eye. There's a whole lot of politics involved. The media skews things. We are set up in a way that causes us to, we've got a broken system and we certainly need to fix it. And yep. I think your show Surviving the System is a great place for people to find out more information about that. And if you listening to this, like the show, you thought it would be impactful, you think that maybe your friends or family could get something from it, take this opportunity right now to share the show with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, you can do so at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. I most definitely will be getting thrown off of Twitter. In fact, the day's not over yet. It might've already happened. So you can check in with me there. Dave, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
All right, guys. Everybody take care. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.